Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Thanks, guys, for getting on the phone. Guys, it's gender neutral. I have Melissa DeRosa, Secretary Robert Mujica, Budget Director Beth Garvey, Special Counsel Howard Zucker, Commissioner of Health, Gareth Rhodes, Deputy Financial Safety Supervisor, but he's been assigned to the chamber during this situation. Today is day 233. We're testing both red zones and statewide. In the red zones, the infection rate, positivity rate was 3.3. Okay, that's way down from where it was. The red zones are Brooklyn, Queens, Rockland, Orange. Statewide, without the oversample of the red zones, 1.1, which is great. Positivity of the entire state with the red zone oversample, 1.2. As the red zones come down, the differential between the oversample goes down, right? So it's 1.1 without the red zones. It's 1.2 with the red zones. 14 New Yorkers passed away. There are now thoughts and prayers. 954 were hospitalized. There are two numbers in the 934 in the hospitalization rate. One is the discharge. How many were discharged? Second is how many were admitted, right? The 934 is a net number between discharge and admissions. The discharges go down over the weekend. They don't do a lot of discharges over the weekend. The good news in the 934 is the admissions were down over the weekend. So that is good news. Fewer people went into the hospitals. 198 were in ICU, 106 were intubated. By red zone, 1 week, Brooklyn went from 5.8 to 5.2, Queens from 3.3 to 2.3, Rockland 9.7 to 4.5, Orange 12.4 to 4.6. By region, New York City is 1.3, Capital District 1.1, Central New York 1.1, Finger Lakes 1.5, Long Island 1.0, Mid-Hudson 1.4, that's predominantly Orange and Rockland, Mohawk Valley 0.3, North Country 1.3, Southern Tier 1.2, Western New York 0.9, that's a good number for Western New York. Today. Again, these are weekend numbers, which we take with a grain of salt. I get many questions when I say New York is 1.1, et cetera. And a lot of the stories after I report the numbers say, governor said today the number is 1.1. And then people say to me, but is that good? Is that bad? Is one high? Is one low? Because there's no context reported for the number. I think the context is important so people know what 1% means, what 2% means. It's New York has one of the lowest positivity rates in the nation. It depends on the day, but we're like the second or the third lowest, depending on the day. You have states like Maine or Vermont, which tend to be very low. New Hampshire can be low. But that's it. You look at the big states, the positivity rate is much higher. And some of the states, the positivity rate is really much, much higher. So we're talking about 1% in New York State, right? Iowa, 50%. Nevada, 37%. South Dakota, 36%. Idaho, 29%. Wisconsin, 24%. Wyoming, 20%. Nebraska, 18%. Kansas, 17%. Mississippi, 16%. Alabama, 16%. Utah, 15%. Florida, 11%. Indiana, 10%. Montana, 10%. North Dakota, 10%. Pennsylvania, 9%. Arkansas, 9%. Arizona, 9%. Tennessee, 8%. Oklahoma, 8%. Texas, 7%. So you see, these states are much, much higher. California, 2.5. Even Jersey and Connecticut are higher. So put the 1% in context, and I think people understand that we're doing very well. Well, they should, because the number says we're doing well. Why are we doing well? Because we're very aggressive about it. And when we see a flare-up or a hot spot, we jump all over it, as you know, because you are subject to our aggressive action. The microclusters are, I think, the most sophisticated way in the country to go around this, about this. You know, I did some of the morning shows this morning. They're all talking about the fall and the viral surge and the numbers going up across the country. And nobody wanting to close down because COVID fatigue, people are tired, and there's very little tolerance for reduction of economic activity. Yeah, and see, most of these states only have statewide data or region-wide data. So if they were to do something, they'd have to do it across the state or across the region. The micro-cluster approach, first of all, targets the outbreak sooner and faster and tighter, and the restrictions are only neighborhood-wide. Now, that neighborhood may not like it, but it's only a neighborhood. It's only a piece of Brooklyn. It's only a piece of Orange. It's only a piece of Rockland. It's not the region. It's not even the county. It's not the city. So there are significant advantages to this microcluster approach. The unemployment rate in the state is something to notice. It was 16%, as high as 16% during the pandemic. It's now down to 9.7%. So that is also very good news. We have a long way to go, but it's moving in the right direction. So that is good news. I want to chat about the vaccines for a moment to put this in focus. Let's look ahead. We've been behind on this virus from day one, and you don't win when you're behind. We're looking at the fall and the winter. The fall, you will have increased viral transmission. Everybody has said it. We have been prepared for it. And our microcluster strategy is going to be our response. It's the fall. More people come indoors, more schools, more colleges, more flare-ups. Okay. More aggressive targeting, quick on restrictions, see an ember, crush the amber. That will be the fall. The flare-ups will be different across the state. They'll come and they'll go, flare up, suffocate it, another flare up somewhere else. That's what we expect for the fall. Winter will be the season of the vaccine, we hope. We all hope and pray for a vaccine. The federal administration literally says, DHHS Secretary Azar, when we have the vaccine, that's when it's over. No. When we have the vaccine, that's only the beginning of the end. The beginning of the end. Once you have the vaccine, step two is convincing the American people it's safe, which I think is going to be easier said than done. Third is administering the vaccine. Oh, that's just administration. That's an operational task. Hey, my friends, life is an operational task. Testing is an operational task. Social distancing is an operational task. Having enough hospital beds is an operational task. Acquiring PPE from China is an operational task. Government does operations, sets policy. We need a vaccine. Great. We all agree with the policy. Now develop a program, administration of the vaccine. And the program is always more difficult because it's more complex and more detailed. You can tell the quality of a government by how it produces, right? It's about the results. It's not about the words, it's about the action. It's not about, do we have a vaccine that the science community developed because they're going to make a lot of money at it. It's going to be, do you have the capacity to administer it quickly, fairly, efficiently, and safely? This is going to be one of the operational challenges of all time. I believe this is going to be the hardest operational challenge that we faced since COVID began, because the only second runner-up for operational challenges was testing. Testing was organizing the labs, putting up testing sites, acquiring the reagents, explaining to the people why they should actually get tested and that it was safe. We had to put up 800 testing sites. We had to coordinate 300 labs. And that was the most challenging operational task. We do more tests pro rata than any state in the nation, and we believe in it fundamentally. Administering a vaccine is going to make testing look simple. And to give you an idea of the level of difficulty we're talking about, I gave you the New York State numbers. 7 months, all hands on deck to get testing in place, right? Every local department of health, every hospital, every clinic, every lab, everyone doing everything they could to get ready to take tests. 900 PSAs, get a test. Paul Rudd, get a test. National Guard, setting up testing. Everything we had, we threw at it. In 7 months, how many tests did we do? 13 million. How many vaccines would we have to do? 20 million. And that's if they just required one vaccine. The vaccines they're talking about require two dosages, 21 to 28 days apart. So it would be 20 million people twice, which is 40 million. But even take just 20 million. We only did 13 million tests in 7 months. how long is it going to take us to administer 20 million vaccines? And remember, a test is just a nasal swab. A vaccine is probably a needle. That's true across the board. Ohio did 4 million tests. They have 11 million people. Texas did 7 million tests. They have 29 million people. They'd have to do fourfold. Florida did 8 million tests. They have 21 million people. They'd have to do threefold. Our testing was much higher, so the differential isn't as great for us. But just to make it simple, if you don't like a lot of numbers, the United States of America has done 124 million tests. It has 328 million people. That's only about a third of the population in number of tests. In 7 months, you tested a third in 7 months. How long does it take you to vaccinate 100%? And how does it happen? The federal government made a terrible blunder at the beginning of COVID. They were not ready, they were unprepared, and they didn't even try to get prepared. It was a federal abdication. What the president said was, the states have to do it. Oh, how convenient. The states have to do it. When you have a situation that affects all 50 states, by definition, that is a national problem. That's the definition of all 50 states. It's a national problem. This federal government says, I'm abdicating my responsibility and delegating it to the states. That's how they handled the first time. And it was a terrible mistake. How are they handling the vaccine? The same way. CDC asked them, what's your plan for distribution? It's basically going to come down to, we're going to deliver it to the states. And then tell them you need refrigeration equipment to keep it at minus 80 degrees, and you have to do two dosages, 21 to 28. Fine. And then how did the states do it? It's testing redux, where the states had to scramble, the states had to find reagents, the states had to get to China. It's the same mistake we made last time. And what is your estimate and how long it's going to take? 7 months, you did a third of the population in number of tests. How long will it take you to do vaccines? And you want to see the American people lose more trust. As soon as we get a vaccine, we're fine. And then when the vaccine is ready to be given out, the first vaccine, there'll be a White House ceremony, I'm sure. Back to the Rose Garden, super spreader event. And the president will stand up and say, we did it. Here it is. I'm holding up the vial that is the vaccine. Happy days are here again. Go back to work. Open the economy. I told you it was all a hoax, and here it is now. I have the vial. Okay, you have the vial. You just need 328 million more, and then you have to actually administer the vaccination to the entire population. So we are just repeating the same mistakes again. Caveat, the governors learned this lesson, and I think the American people did too, but the NGA, National Governors Association, Democratic governors, Republican governors, sent 35 questions to the president on the distribution of the vaccine and the administration of the vaccine. Why? Because the governors know because the governors are the ones who got handed the bag, right? They're the ones who are going to have to administer this vaccine, and they learned from the testing. And remember, on the testing, the federal government will say they helped. CDC helped with some setting up some sites, etc. Even with the federal help, you only did 38% of the size of the population in 7 months. So, fool me once. We only have several weeks before they say a vaccine is ready. Let's understand now how it's supposed to happen. Let's not deceive the American people again. Once we have the vaccine, it's over. No, doesn't work that way. That is not the truth. And let's start telling the truth. Okay, let's do questions, operator.
Thank you for the question and answer session. As a reminder, to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your questions, please press the pound key. Again, as a reminder, to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your questions, press the pound key. Please stand by while I compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Zach Sink from NY1.
Hey, how are you?
Good, Zach. How are we doing, buddy?
I'm good, thank you. I wanted to ask you regarding the red zone. It seems like the numbers are moving in the right direction there. I'm wondering if you have any target number you're looking at to kind of lift these restrictions. Would it be done gradually? And what's your sense of just a timetable, given the pace that you're seeing of those numbers coming down?
Good question. First, I spoke to a number of community leaders last night about it. It is a pure function of the numbers, right? This has nothing to do with any particular religion, any particular culture. It's just a function of numbers. This is where the numbers are, what blocks they are in, what neighborhood they are in. And that's how the red zone is designed. Number two, I said, just to avoid any confusion, clarification, this is all subject to state law. A city, a county cannot enact, override, or supersede these laws. They have no local authority, okay? So it's not up to Rockland County, it's not up to Orange County, it's not up to the city of New York. This is all state law. And a couple of the conversations yesterday, they said, well, Rockland County thinks it should be this number, Orange County thinks it should be this number, New York City said that it should be this number. That's nice. It's also wholly irrelevant because it's just a personal opinion without any legal authority. Having said that, we're working with a number of communities on a direct basis to get the numbers down. We're also working on a second set of target numbers, Zach. We had target numbers for the first phases, which were region-wide. You have to hit X, you have to hit Y. We're working on similar guidelines for these red zones. It also, since these are such small zones, it's not just a number. It's a number and a set of circumstances. If they are actually cooperating and we see the numbers coming down and we know there are plans to get them down further, we would feel more comfortable, right? It's a number plus circumstances. In a region, you couldn't really tell the individual circumstances because the region was so wide. Here, we know exactly where it's coming from and why. So, you can have circumstances where you have certain actions you've taken in a community where we feel comfortable it's going to bring down the numbers, right? You have three bars in some counties that have been spreading the virus. If you said to me, we're closing those three bars, then I would feel more comfortable about reopening, because I knew the source was those three bars, and I knew if you close those three bars, the number's going to come down. So we're looking at situations like that in the red zones. You're right, the numbers have come down, particularly in Queens, and we can adjust the zones. You can make them bigger, you can make them smaller, because you have the numbers block by block, basically, right? So you can change the contours, and we're going through that today, tomorrow, and on Wednesday we'll announce changes to the zones. And I do anticipate changes to the zones.
Your next question comes from Elena Barilla of NBC News Plattsburgh.
Good morning, Governor. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I was just wondering if you could go into further detail about the priority chart and the phase chart in the VAP draft. To me, it initially looks like two different plans. I was just wondering how they relate to one another.
Okay. I'm going to ask Gareth Rhodes to give you more detail, but let me just say this about the VAP plan. The VAP plan is preliminary because to do a real plan, you need more information from the federal government. They asked for a plan. We gave them a draft. But in truth, I don't think we have enough detail to put together a truly informative plan. We don't even know how many dosages we're getting, when we're getting them. Is it on a weekly basis, a monthly basis? Do we get delivered 1 million at a time, or do we get delivered 10 million at a time? Who stores them, which is a whole different issue. So the whole statewide plan is very preliminary. But having said that, Gareth, do you want to speak to the specific?
Sure. And just to follow up with what the governor said, this is really just, you know, a preliminary plan, a draft plan. What was put forward is a prioritization matrix. This is based on both the prevalence of COVID in the geographic area, which of course will be determined in the future once a vaccine has been approved, but then also with the matrix is the high-risk population and essential workers. So that is the prioritization matrix where workers who are essential workers and the highest risk population in the communities that have the highest prevalence of COVID will be prioritized first. And then to see within the group of essential workers and high-risk population who will be prioritized within those groups, that's when you go to the different phases. Where in phase one, you have healthcare workers in patient settings, you have long-term care facility workers who interact with residents, the most at-risk long-term care facility patients, and in phase two, the first responders, public health workers, et cetera. So they're both linked. One is just a matrix based on where COVID is spreading in the state, and the second is it lays out which population is in which phase of essentialness and risk categories.
Next question, operator.
Your next question comes from Steve Burns from WCBS 880.
Good morning, Governor. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. I wanted to ask about kind of a tri-state perspective on this. You mentioned New Jersey and Connecticut's numbers are going up. I know New Jersey's numbers have risen above a threshold where kind of the equivalent numbers would have been acted on in New York in a micro-cluster kind of strategy. How concerning is it that those numbers are still going up? There doesn't seem to be the kind of proportionate action in New Jersey and Connecticut. Governor Murphy's actually looking at relaxing some more restrictions.
It's a problem, Steve. It's a problem. New Jersey, Connecticut have worked with us, as have other northeastern states, on a operating basis since this began. Also, there are so many interconnections between Jersey and Connecticut and Pennsylvania, where you have a workforce that comes and goes every day. There's just a lot of interconnection and travel. I don't, if you were to limit access to New Jersey or Connecticut, I don't know if it's even to what extent it would be possible to do border patrol because you don't have airports there, et cetera. And it would also be seriously disruptive to the economy. So it is complicated, and we're working with them, but we don't have any final conclusion yet. But for all practical matters, you can't do border control with New Jersey and Connecticut.
Your last question comes from Marsha Kramer of WCBS-TV.
Good morning, Governor. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Marsha. I'm a little tired, though, because I worked over the weekend. I was in the office on Saturday. I did a briefing in New York City where you would normally be. I did one on Sunday in New York City where you would normally be.
And yes, Governor, I chose to get a pedicure. What can I tell you?
Shows what you think about me. Governor's briefing or pedicure? Pedicure.
Well, don't take it personally. So I have two questions, actually. They're sort of related. One has to do with any precautions you're taking in terms of sending law enforcement personnel to Williamsburg, where there's supposed to be this wedding. And the second thing is sort of a follow-up on Zach's question. The work that you're doing with specific groups in order to reduce the size of the zones. I noticed that in Queens, the number has gone down to 2.3%. What actions are you taking there? And do you think that Queens might have some restrictions lifted come Wednesday?
Yeah, on the enforcement in Brooklyn, first I spoke to some of the leaders from that area yesterday. They had a different interpretation of what the activity was going to be. They suggested it wasn't a protest at all, and they didn't expect a large volume of people in the community. But in any event, yes, the state law enforcement is working with the city law enforcement to be ready for that. On the design of the red zones, you're right again. The Queens numbers are better than the Brooklyn numbers. Orange and Rockland numbers are still high. We have total flexibility in these zones. You know, once you get below the regional level, remember everything before had to be on a regional level. So it was New York City and Nassau, Suffolk. Then we went to we pulled out Nassau, Suffolk, but it was at least on the county level. Here, Marsha, you can draw the lines on these maps wherever you want. Literally, you can just configure it block by block. So as discrete areas get better, you can rewrite the size of the zones. And that's what we're looking at doing now. And if we know certain activities are going to be curtailed, which we believe have been significant generators, then we can do even more. So it's not just looking at the data. We're looking at the data. We're talking to the groups. And we'll do that today and tomorrow, and then we'll announce them on Wednesday. One other issue that came up, not to belabor it, but, you know, talking to these groups, right, it's Orange, Rockland, Nassau, and New York City. They all say, well, you know, I talked to the local official, and the local official said 2%. The local official said 4%. County executives is 6%. The mayor said 2%. Everybody has an opinion. That's nice. But nobody has legal authority besides the state, right? So I get everybody has an opinion, but it causes confusion, and they have no legal authority. So it doesn't really matter what their opinion is. Reminds me of the story of the pork chop. Do you remember the story of the pork chop, Marcia? The story of the pork chop was a person goes into a butcher shop, says, how much are a pound of pork chops? The man says, the pound of pork chops is $2 a pound. The person says, okay, give me 2 pounds. And he says, I'm sorry, I'm out. So, okay. Person leaves, goes to the butcher shop across the street and says, how much is a pound of pork chops? He says, $4 a pound. And the person says, $4 a pound? It's only $2 a pound across the street. And the butcher says, so, well, then go buy them across the street. And the person says, well, the butcher across the street is out. He said, oh, he's out of pork chops. When I'm out of pork chops, they're only $1 a pound. On that, thank you all very much for taking the time today. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.